Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another installment of Fan Experience TV. As always, this show is produced and presented by Playing the Field. Playing the Field is a sports fan community and dating app that aims to help you find friends, game buddies, teammates, or your MVP and build off of that common love of sports. So we are on episode 68. I am your host, Mike Kados. Alongside me is my co-host, Rick Molina. 68 episodes. The same number of accusers. Deshaun Watson is right now. I'll let you start.
Well, how's everybody doing tonight? And yeah, you know, the hottest story right now in sports and in news is this thing with Deshaun Watson. Up to 9 accusers now accusing him of sexual assault. In 3 civil lawsuits filed, and this thing is taking on a life of its own. At first, it was one accuser and this attorney, and people were saying the attorney's about himself. And then before you know it, man, it's just snowballed out of control right now. And if you're Deshaun Watson, you got to come out and say something. I don't think you can stay back anymore and just keep quiet and hide behind your attorneys. Like, you have to come out and forcefully defend yourself and say what took place here. Because if not, this is going to go from bad to worse to, you know, now it's civil lawsuits. Next thing, it's going to end up in a courtroom. And you're going to be in front of a jury if this way things go. And look, you have to listen to the accusers. You have to take the accusers' word for it. They should be heard. Their story should be heard. And these women should have their day in court if it comes to it. They should be respected. And you know, we'll just wait and see how this plays out. But if you're Deshaun Watson, 2 months ago, you're trying to work your way out of Houston to go wherever you wanted to go. And now you're almost becoming untouchable. I don't know what team would want to get involved in this if this thing keeps going the way it is. The NFL just said that they're going to start investigating this. And like I said, Deshaun Watson's got to get out there and he's got to make a statement and say something. But this could get uglier, man. Like, more accusers could come out and say, hey, listen, he's done a thing. And if this is a pattern, then Deshaun Watson's fooled a lot of people because he's had this nice guy image. And all of a sudden it's coming out that if he's what these allegations are to be, it's truly horrific.
Yeah, and you said the word pattern. If we're talking 9 now.
Yeah.
9. And it's hard to hide from that, but you're innocent until proven guilty.
That's
in,
correct.
In this country, even in Texas, everywhere in this country. So obviously he needs to have his say. And I heard that he enlisted the help of the lawyer that Roger Clemens used.
Rusty Harden.
Yeah, I definitely want to hear his side of the story and hear what happened. And the only place I've read about the 9 was on TMZ. I know about 3, but TMZ's reporting 9. So
yeah.
I don't know what to believe. Like, I haven't seen it on any other articles. So that's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, listen, TMZ's always pretty accurate. You know.
Agreed. And they're usually the first ones to get to it. And that's probably why it's the only one out there right now, because that came out a couple of hours ago. But everyone will obviously do their due diligence and try to cover this thing as closely as they possibly can, considering it's a huge deal. And it's extremely unfortunate to hear it all. And I pray that it's not true. Because it's a lot.
That's a lot, man. But
lot of indiscretions that occurred with a lot of different women. And I really hope that not that it's fabricated. I don't want to say that it's fabricated, but maybe misconstrued, or I don't know. I really don't know what to make of it, but Deshaun Watson needs to have the opportunity to at least defend himself.
I agree with you, but he needs to come out, Mike, and say something forceful. Like, he needs to come out and say whether this is not true and never happened, or this is my side of the story.
Yeah, going silent is
not the answer, man. You can't go into a cocoon. He can't go into a bubble all of a sudden and now be like, I'll have my attorney handle it. No, man. If you're innocent, you didn't do anything, come out. And you're right. We are innocent of proven guilty in this country. But the courtroom of public opinion now is starting to say, hey, wait a minute, man. What's going on here? There's got to be something to it. It's a pattern. All these massages, and he wanted this done, and he made him intimidate him. That one girl flew him in from Atlanta to Houston to give him a massage. Like, all these, like, it's a really crazy story, you know, that it went from 1 to 9. And who's to say there's not another
15 more.
Like, we don't know. So he's got to come out and say something. Like, you just can't be quiet there and say, my attorney's going to handle it. Like, you're under siege, man. Get out there and say something if it's not true. And, yeah, and here's the other thing. Yeah. If you're the Houston Texans now, man, are you really now have leverage over him if he either you're going to play for us, you don't play at all. And then he's – and then but they've also losing leverage in the sense of like for a trade because now a team's going to be like, whoa,
yeah,
we're not going near that. And then the question becomes, is Deshaun Watson going to play football next year?
We're going to have to see how this plays out. And you remember a decade ago, Ben Roethlisberger was dealing with some allegations of his own. And I think that was a little more serious than Watson's dealing with. Not saying either are good at all. Ben Roethlisberger still played football and he was cleared of all the charges that were placed against him. We really have to just see how it plays out. It's a waiting game. And I completely agree with you. He has to say something. He has to try and figure out a way to say something and obviously work with his PR team and stuff like that. But he has to just say it with his own words as much as possible and put his face on blast. And his credibility is at stake. Yeah. Everything's at stake.
100%. And listen, this is the time of year in the NFL we're talking about free agency, who's getting signed, who's moving where, you know, who didn't get signed. And for this to be the biggest story in the NFL is just rough. With the draft coming up in a month, this is the time of year that the NFL, again, still owns with, you know, draft and combine and all stuff. For this to be the top story is just is tough for the NFL. But we never want to hear
this kind of stuff anywhere.
Yeah, but we just got to wait and see how this all plays out. It is a tough story to follow, that's for sure.
Yeah, but we won't pick your ears on the Deshaun Watson because we're going to hear it all weekend long and for a lot longer than that. We want to just put in our two cents. But now we will be bringing on our next guest. We are excited to welcome Kyle Mumma to the show. Did I got that right, Mumma?
You got it. Moo like a cow. Yeah. Not everybody gets that
right. All right. Perfect. Kyle, you know, thank you very much for coming on. We obviously talked about a very serious issue going on in sports and the NFL. So I don't want to put you on the spot. So let's talk about you. You're born and raised in North Carolina. Talk to us about your favorite teams and how you got started rooting for some of the teams that you like and what really hooked you in to sports.
Yeah, favorite teams are all North Carolina-based teams other than the Atlanta Braves, which I guess is the regional version of a North Carolina team there. It's about the closest thing we had growing up. All sorts of different stories getting into them. The Braves were a reactionary fandom against my parents cheering for the Yankees in the 96 World Series. The Panthers were a new relocation team when I was a kid, and my mom wanted me to cheer for them instead of my dad's team, the Cowboys, because they had some legal issues of their own in the 90s with Michael Irvin and company. The Hurricanes, another expansion team in my days that I got to latch on to. And then Duke is my big team there. That's in my blood. Both, you know, my parents went, my dad went to Duke. Both my sisters and I went to Duke. My fiance and her parents and her brother all went to Duke. So lots of Duke in the blood. That one runs pretty deep. So.
Yeah, no, I read that in the background that you filled out, and it's everybody was, you know, went to Duke. And I especially loved the story at the end with winning over your fiance's parents. Share that one, because that one was great.
Yeah, so I worked for the basketball team at Duke for a long time. So I worked there as a student, and then I was on staff after school. And one of the perks that comes with being a Duke basketball manager is you get two tickets to any game basically for life. And I took advantage of that. And the woman that I was interested in, her parents were coming to town. I knew they were big Duke fans. Her younger brother was at Duke at the time, and he was going to sneak in her other brother. So the brothers were both going to be there. So I knew if I could get the parents' seats behind the bench that they would get to be there with all their kids, and it would be a great moment for them. And I remember her mom at one point during the game breaking down into tears a little bit. She was so excited. And at that point, I felt pretty good about my chances. And here we are today. We're engaged. So worked out.
Congratulations, man. I want to get back to that World Series because I remember the 96 World Series. I'm a diehard Yankee fan. The Leyritz home run, the Girardi triple, if it wasn't in game six. But are your parents, so you just decided I'm going to root for the Braves because my parents are Yankee fans, and to hell with it, I'm rebelling.
Yeah, exactly. I remember where I was at a camp out for my cousin's birthday party, and my mom decided she wasn't really a big baseball fan, but they decided they were going to cheer for the Yankees. And I guess I was mad at my mom that day. And so my cousin and I decided we were just going to cheer like crazy for the Braves. And obviously they lost the series and I cried. I had never thought about baseball before, or cared about baseball before, and pretty much, you know, followed every Braves game from there on out. So
that's incredible. And then obviously your love for Duke. Now I remember watching Duke the first 1991 when they played against Larry Johnson, Stacy Ogden. Yep. They played that team against Runner Rebs, and then they won it the year later with Bobby Hurley and Christian Leighton. Well, when was your first experience watching Duke basketball down there in North Carolina? When did you first feel like just fall in love with it?
Yeah, so the first teams, oddly enough, that I remember the best were the mid-90s when Duke had a little bit of a downturn when Coach K missed some time, and Steve Wojciechowski and Chris Collins and Jeff Capel and those guys were on those teams. And that was like when I was first baptized into the Duke basketball world. Obviously, the downturns for Duke basketball don't last very long. So the rest of my childhood, we were great with 2001 championship. And by the time 2010 rolled around, I was in school and I was part of the team. And I was working with those guys, with Chris Collins and Wojo and Jeff Capel. And they were all on staff while I was there. Got to know those guys as friends, which was obviously a cool experience for me, having grown up idolizing them and watching them.
That's incredible.
Awesome. So you didn't play in college, but you became a student manager for the program. Now, was that because of like the ties that you had? Did you have an inside leg on it, or did you just work your butt off to just find a way to get onto that team and help out that team any way possible?
Yeah, I like to think that I earned it I earned it 100%. We had a manager from my high school about 5 or 6 years ahead of me who had just been through, and I talked to him a couple times about it in advance. But to be honest with you, I think it actually worked against me that I had some ties, because they really want to make sure whoever they're bringing into the team and into the family, so to speak, is there for the right reasons. It's not just that part of the test is like, are you just a Duke basketball fan who wants to sit behind the bench, or are you someone who wants to really be part of the program and be part of building a culture there? And so I really had to prove in the application and the interview process that I wasn't just a fanboy who was excited to hang out with the players. I wanted to be able to, you know, really be part of the team and part of the program.
Yeah, I love how you mentioned that. It was like a different mindset, you know, switching it from fan to being an actual part of that team. You know, so what kind of things did you change mentally going into that type of role?
Yeah, it's still to this day is hard to explain how it has impacted my fandom, but it has very much. Like I remember as a kid, we had season tickets to Duke basketball games, and I would go to every game, and I was doing the chants and all the Cameron Crazy stuff. And that was my world. I was just obsessed with that stuff. And then you become part of the program and you get to know the guys and you get to know the coaching staff and you get to know the guys from the past. And I still feel like part of the team. I'm wearing a Brotherhood t-shirt right now. That's nice. It's a huge part of my identity. And I think when you get to know the guys on a really different level, it just changes the way you look at it. I have no time for people who want to go flame athletes on Twitter. And, you know, when you know what goes into it and you're around it on a daily basis for a long period of time, it just totally changes your perspective on how hard those guys work, how just challenging it is to live the life that they live. And I know we look at them and we're like, oh, they get to play a game for a living and that's great. But there's a lot that goes into that. And so it just shifts the type of respect that you have for those guys and the way that you look at the game going forward.
So when you're in Cameron Indoor and those fans are going wild, are you just blocking that out? Or do you look around and just, wow, I'm in Cameron Indoor Arena. It's pretty crazy.
It's funny. When you're a manager, you have to be you're paying attention to things that nobody else is paying attention to. So you're paying attention to, all right, the clock's at 7:59. So I know the next whistle, there's going to be a dead ball, and I've got to sprint down to the end of the bench and get coach's whiteboard and knock over that cup of Gatorade before he kicks it over. And you're thinking about a thousand things that have nothing to do with the basketball game. And I find myself when I go to games still thinking in that mindset, right? If I see a towel sitting on the bench that's not supposed to be there, it's driving me crazy. And I'm sitting next to my dad who's watching the basketball game and just trying to enjoy himself. So it drives my family crazy sometimes the way that I consume sports these days. But one of my favorite experiences is taking someone to a game in Cameron who's never been before and getting to experience that type of appreciation for it through their eyes, through someone who's never seen it before. Because even before I worked for the team, I'd been going to Duke games for 20 years. And so for me, it's something that I'm used to at this point. And so getting to see someone take it in for the first time is always really special for me.
And I want to get the perspective from you that as you work for Duke, what's that North Carolina Duke rivalry, the week leading up to it, the intensity of the games, what's it like, man? Because I seen it on TV and I'm like, these people just want to go at it.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Growing up there, like I remember as a kid in school, like it was everything to win that game and be able to go to school the next day and wear my Duke t-shirt and feel good about it. And if you go on a long losing streak to the other team, it's painful constantly, right? Like that, there are years where that's all that matters. It's like, yeah, you guys won the title, but like we beat you three times and once in the ACC championship game. And like that's, we'll take that, right? Like that's how big a deal it is there. You can feel the energy of that game. And I'm lucky enough to have been to, you know, probably 25 of them in Cameron and a handful of them in the Dean Dome. And the energy of that game just feels different than anything else. It's one of those things that's hard to describe, but when you're in the gym and in the arena before a big game and you just feel, you just feel a different type of energy. And those games always have it. Even no matter how good the two teams are, those games just always have it.
Yeah. Hey, I missed that feeling of being inside of a stadium and just soaking in everything around you. When was the last time you went to a live game anywhere?
Oh, man. I went to some Duke games last spring. So it was actually the last game that I went to was the Duke Carolina game last spring. It was a couple days before Rudy Gobert and the NBA shut down. Yeah. It was that weekend before. So I think Rudy Gobert stuff was on a Wednesday or Thursday, and that Duke UNC game was the previous Saturday. Yeah, that was the last one that I went to. I got to have kind of that last pulse of energy before everything went out.
Yeah, it's been a lot longer for me. I think it was a Mets game in probably like August of the year before.
Yeah.
Of 19. So it's been a minute. So did you, obviously big college basketball fan, so did you fill out a bracket and who you like in moving forward?
I did fill out a bracket. It's been a weird year. I would expect it to be a weird tournament. I'm sure we'll see some strange things happen. I'm sure you guys saw Duke had to drop out of the ACC tournament. It would surprise me if we don't see something like that happen at some point in the NCAA tournament. I hope we don't, but I would expect something like that to happen at some point. I think in a year like this, obviously anything can happen. And even saying that, I feel pretty confident in Gonzaga being the best team. I think they've got a little bit of everything. They've got some vets. They've got some young guys. They've got the guards. They've got the bigs. They can shoot it. They're very well coached. I just think they've been knocking at the door for what feels like a couple decades now. I think this is the year they get it done.
Great. I'm with you on that. I don't follow college basketball much, but everybody's just going on Gonzaga. So I'm just going to – that's the one I'm going to – on my bracket. I'm going to go from beginning to end. I'm going to load up on that. I wanted to ask you, though, you spent time managing a workout for LeBron James and obviously one of the greatest players of all time. What is that like to be in the gym watching him work out? What's he like? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Coach K would take our managers to Team USA training camp in the summer. In 2012, 2014, 2016, I was with them in Vegas and Chicago and DC managing their training camp and helping them set the tone for either the World Championships or the Olympics, depending on the year. So obviously got to, you know, spend time with all those guys, Kobe, LeBron, Westbrook, Carmelo, all those guys. And I fortunately have had a chance to spend time around a lot of pretty high level athletes. I will say I have not been as intimidated as I was the first USA training camp that I went to. I remember I was rebounding before the first practice, and it was me and another Duke manager, and we were rebounding for LeBron, Kobe, Chris Paul, and Russell Westbrook on a half court. So we were just, they were shooting, we were rebounding, they were just getting warmed up. And I was just weighing over my head. Me and this other guy were just going as hard as we could, trying to throw perfect passes as hard as we could to these guys and get them ready for the workout. And he and I threw a pass to LeBron at the same time. And the ball that I threw hit him in the head.
Oh,
and this is 5 or 10 minutes into my first experience with Team USA. And I just threw a pass into LeBron James's face. And he gathers himself for a second, walks over to me, just like puts his hand on my head, like gives me like an old fashioned noogie, and just goes, and he's, "Hey man, it's all right. Chill out." And from that point on, I felt a lot more comfortable. But it was when we rebound for guys before practices, right? You say their names when you pass them the ball. So if I'm rebounding for you guys, I'd pass Mike the ball. I'd say Mike, and then I'd say Rick. And I was so scared during that practice. We weren't saying anything because I didn't want to be like, I'm like a 19-year-old kid. I'm not going to be like, LeBron, whatever. So I hit him in the face. And from that point forward, I started using their names and felt a lot more comfortable and had an awesome time.
That's incredible. So that's an incredible story. So let's get into, so you are a founder of Next Play, your company. It's a sports tech company. So tell us about your company and tell us how you decided to innovate this and start this.
Yeah, these guys have a really hard time transitioning out of sports. They spend their entire lives, usually from the time they're 3, 4, 5 years old, and it's all they know, right? It's the foundation of their identity. It's how they're perceived by their friends and family. It's where their confidence comes from. It's where their skills come from. And then one day it is gone and there's nothing you can do to bring it back. And you got to find a way to move on with your life. And for most athletes, that moment comes the moment they graduate college, right? For the vast majority of them, it comes at that point, if not when they graduate high school. And what the research has shown us is that the most effective way to help them navigate that transition is first of all, just to think about it before the transition happens. And the reason a guy like Kobe transitioned so successfully before he passed away is he thought about it. He laid the foundation for that transition before it came. But most of these guys don't. And this is true, by the way. I've talked to Shane Battier about this a number of times. He had some serious struggles with transition that he's talked about. I've also talked to, you know, Division III field hockey players who struggled with this transition. And so it's true from the highest levels all the way down to what we would say is a low-level elite athlete. And through my experience at Duke, I watched a lot of guys struggle with this, including some guys that I personally recruited. And I felt like we could do better. And frankly, I knew that if we were doing poorly at Duke, they were probably doing much worse at other places. And so we've worked to try to build a solution. And what we do now is we have a white labeled mobile application that we sell to universities where these athletes can use it as a place to connect with each other throughout that transition. The schools can use it as a place to keep them engaged with private content. And then employers can recruit the athletes that are on our platform. So if you think about it in a Duke basketball context, we have the Brotherhood app. It's a place where they can stay connected to each other. It's a place where Coach K can post a video after the game that goes out to all of our former guys. And then it's a place where if you're Morgan Stanley and you want to hire high-level athletes, then you can post a job privately within this community. That's what we're doing to try to help fix some of these transition problems for these high-level athletes.
Yeah, no, and it's a very common problem. And, it seems to me that, you know, we're only like starting to try to showcase that and highlight what's going on. And because it's been something that's going on for a long time, and not to mention people get injured when they're about to go into a draft or whatever the case is. And then they don't get that shot and they had everything just pretty much banked on going to the draft or going to the NBA, it's going to the NFL, MLB, whatever the case is. So it's great. So would you say it's like a private LinkedIn for the certain schools that you're...
That's exactly right. It's a private social network, right? So when you think about an athlete, now LinkedIn's a great resource, but it's 700 million people. It's an overwhelming pool of folks who, many of whom have nothing in common. Athletes have this really strong connection to others who have been in their shoes before, who have played in their program. And so by connecting those groups, we can have some, we can create some really powerful outcomes. And it's not just, my hope is that in the future, it's not just something for athletics, right? It's, I think we all benefit from affinity networks of people who have something in common with us, who can help guide us through a challenging period in our lives. And so you could see something like this being beneficial in military transitions or just college transitions in general. So we'll continue to try to expand it out as we go here.
Yeah, I love the name, and it makes so much sense. You know, what's your next play? Yeah.
It's a Coach K-ism at its core. It's something I took from him. He talked about all the time, whether it goes well for you or goes poorly for you, you got to be ready to play the next play. You got to go down the court, and whether you just had a huge dunk on someone's head or you just got dunked on, the next play is the next play, and you got to be ready for it. So that's true, and as he would always say, in sports and in life, and that's how we're looking at it.
Okay. Yeah. You're getting the advice from one of the best, so.
Absolutely. Kyle, let me ask you this. Are you finding in your research that, yes, these schools have these programs, let's say the schools, but also the professional leagues, they have these education programs, but are guys just not taking like the end of their careers that serious? Are they really not prepping in terms of financially, making sure like entrepreneur spirits are out there? Are they not really preparing for what's coming next? Or is it that the leagues aren't just helping them along the way?
I would say it's some of both. I would say at the end of the day, there is an incentive problem on the league and team side, right? Like people get paid based on how many games they win or lose. If the example I always use is if Coach K went, our teams went 0-30 for the next 3 years, but every single one of our players graduated with a $200,000 a year job and no mental health issues, he'd still get fired, right? That's not what he's being judged on. And so there's an incentive problem there where if you got to make a choice between winning games or providing resources, you just naturally are going to lean towards the winning games category. But I would say most places try to do something about this. And the other side of the coin, as you pointed out, Rick, is players don't always take advantage of it. And there's a reason for that too. They have been bred their whole life to think that, again, this is who they are, right? This is their identity. This is what's going to set them apart for their peers. This is what's going to bring them opportunity in life. And so if they're given the option between going to a financial literacy seminar or getting up an extra 1,000 jump shots, they're going to pick the jump shots more often than not. And you can't blame them. And they are also told you're an elite level athlete, no distractions. You should be focused on sports all the time. You need to be a gym rat, right? That's what they're fed for their whole lives. And so you can't blame them for then not investing in some of these things off the court or off the field.
Got it. And you mentioned Shane Battier struggled after he, what are some of the things you're uncovering that athletes are struggling with once they leave the game? Are they battling depression? Is it, you know, alcohol? Is it just they're lost? What are some of the things you've encountered?
Yeah, it's really this lack of identity. And so it's this loss.
No. Oh,
lost your audio. Sound there.
Audio's out.
Technical Sorry, difficulties. Guys. There you go. Yeah.
All right. We got you.
We got you back. And we lost you.
Nope. We lost you again.
I sat on my mute button there.
There you go. Yeah.
it's a loss of identity. So they live this life from age 5 to age 35 in someone like Shane's case. And then it just stops. And oftentimes their motivation stops with it. Their happiness stops with it. Struggle in their relationships. They struggle with depression. We've seen a lot of athletes struggle financially because they don't know how to manage their money, but it's also just a lack of purpose. You wake up one day and you're 30 years old and you realize, man, my life is maybe half over, probably not even half over. And I have no idea what I'm going to do with the rest of it. And the thing that I've always done, I can't do anymore. So that is a daunting, scary place to be that fortunately not many of us have to deal with. I think a lot of people go through mental health crises when they retire, but the only fields where you're retiring in your 20s or your 30s are the military and athletics. That's pretty much it. Unless you went and made $1 billion, in which case you're probably fine. So it's just it's a daunting place to be.
Yeah, no, it certainly is. And you obviously did not play. You were sitting there and you were watching these players from afar. What was that like overall aha moment? Like, this needs to be done. We need to do this. Is it because that you were watching them from like a bird's eye view and you weren't sitting there immersed in the whole thing and you weren't taking that athlete route and you were just watching everybody? And was there a specific player, you don't have to say a name or anything, but that really got you motivated to find a solution?
Yeah, so I went to business school at Duke. So I was in the MBA program there in 2018. And I was putting on an event at the business school. And I went to rent a 15-passenger van from the local enterprise in Durham. And the guy who gave me the keys to that van was a former Duke football player who I had recruited, who I had sat in an office with and talked to his parents about how Duke was going to set him up for the rest of his life. And he was going to be part of this great network. And here's the average starting salary of a Duke grad. And this is what you're going to get yourself into. And here he was handing me keys at an enterprise and talking to me about how he couldn't really take the classes he wanted to take while he was in school because of his football schedule. And he never had a chance to do an internship. So he wasn't really sure what he wanted to do. And he never really had a chance to meet a whole lot of alumni, and all of the things that I had told him he was going to be able to do with this degree didn't turn out to be true. And it turns out that the degree that I got from Duke was significantly more valuable than the degree that he got from Duke. And it shouldn't be that way. Athletics is an incredible experience, and you learn so much from being an elite level athlete, right? You think about what companies are looking for in employees. And when you put a job description of entry level employee down, it's resilient, coachable, hard worker, good time management skills. You basically describe an athlete. And yet you have guys like this who are just lost when they finish college athletics. And it was that moment for me was the moment where I was like, all right, we can do better here. And that's when we started.
And were you guys able to help him find anything or?
Yeah. So we put together a program that year, that spring, called the Duke Football Future Initiative, which was a program that we created just out of scratch or from scratch. And it was a series of workshops on everything from resume writing to LinkedIn skills to interviewing skills to how do you network. We did those workshops. We did alumni panels where we brought in alums to talk about their transition experience and how they navigated some of the challenges. We took them to local businesses to give them a sense for what different companies were doing. And the feedback that we got from these guys, from walk-ons who attended, guys who never saw the field, to Daniel Jones was part of that first program, the Giants quarterback. And from top to bottom, from elite to walk-on, they said, hey, this has been the most impactful part of my Duke experience because it has opened my eyes to how football has prepared me for what can come next in my life in a way that I never really appreciated before.
That's awesome.
I commend you for putting all of this, all these resources together and truly making a difference to these athletes. Rick, you had
I was going to follow up because we had Danny Harris on a few episodes ago, and we're talking about branding for college athletes and now college athletes be able to make some money off their name or whatever. And are you guys going to eventually go into that? Will help them establish their brand, whether it's be social media, TikTok, LinkedIn, Instagram, things of that nature. So if they don't go pro and it's not like they can land a job, they can use their likeness to make some money outside.
Yeah. It's a crazy space that is still coming together. Obviously nothing there is, we don't even know what the policy is going to look like yet. And the route that we've taken as a company is basically we've got these communities of athletes, right? And we've got some employers who are willing to offer them opportunities. We have this infrastructure built. Our plan is we will lean on experts who are really well-versed in things like branding for athletes. We'll lean on these companies to put together specific opportunities related to name, image, and likeness for the athletes to capitalize on. So it's not going to be necessarily a core focus of ours, but we think we can use our platform and our communities to enable other folks who are doing a lot of work in this area to help the athletes that we work with. Because obviously it's something we want them to be able to take advantage of.
Yeah. Awesome. And so you started it all with Duke and you're working with a couple of other colleges and I believe you're helping out with the NFL team. So what is that? What's that process like signing on? Because you said it's a white label and it's dedicated for that school. So what's the process like of trying to get that set up and researching that school or the network around that school You know, talk to us about that a little bit.
Yeah, fortunately, we can figure out a lot of the needs that particular community has in the sales process. So as we go through that process with schools, we're trying to figure out exactly what makes their community unique, what makes Duke different from Iowa, different from San Jose State, a couple of our customers, right? They all have very different needs. They all have very different communities. And we can figure a lot of that out as we go through the sales process. But ultimately, what makes those communities different is the people in those communities and not the infrastructure itself. So we've created a platform that we can just brand differently. And these schools can use it to fill their own needs, fit their own community however they want to. But we don't have to do a whole lot of customization. If you said, hey, we want an app for Southeastern State, whatever it is, we can have that done in a couple of days. And then we go through the onboarding process of, here are some different ways that you can use it. Let's identify some alums and some students who are going to be, you know, power users of this. And then we'll set you on your course and help you manage it as you go.
That's great. And what's your 5-year outlook? Do you want to be in every college in the country? What are you looking forward to for the next 5 years?
Yeah, that's the hope when you're trying to, I think, and we talk, this is the ultimate business school cliche. We talk about doing well by doing good, right? Like, I think we have a chance to build a really good business here. But I also think we have a chance to help a whole lot of people. Mm-hmm. I think we have a chance to help companies get access to a really diverse talent pipeline that can help them make their companies better. I think we can change a lot of lives in the process. I think we can help schools raise a lot of money by better engaging their alumni. I think we can help them put some truth behind their recruiting promises. I think the goal for us is create a solution that is a win-win for everybody, right? It's a win for our business. It's a win for the schools. It's a win for the alums. It's a win for the employers. And ultimately, we'd like to make a little bit of money off it while we do it.
And let me ask you this. You're talking about the schools, obviously, but does the individual athlete have to, like, do they pay to get on your site? They just sign up and they're okay.
Yep. And that's the goal, is that the schools, ultimately the schools and the employers are the ones who are going to pay the bills. The athletes, we want to be able to use this without having to pay anything for it. And obviously there's got to be upside there for the school. So we have to make the business case to the school that by better engaging your alumni community and by providing them with better opportunity after they transition, you'll be able to recruit better talent and you'll be able to raise more money from your alums. And that is a real ROI revenue strategy for a school, independent of, does this create better outcomes for our athletes? If they can engage their alums and raise money, then, you know, the side outcome of also our athletes are going to get better jobs is just cherry on top of the cake for them. But ultimately, it means they'll pay the bill and the athletes don't have to.
Got it. And obviously, for the professional athlete, they can also get on there as well. And obviously, they don't pay a fee for them to get the exposure with these top companies out there as well, right?
Exactly. Same model for the pro team that we work with. They're not raising money from their athletes, but they have an opportunity to stay in touch with those athletes for sponsorship opportunities, to get them to come back and do an alumni event or an autograph session, come back to a game. The former players for an NFL team or an MLB team, those are valuable assets and commodities to them too. So they want to keep in touch with that community as well.
Yeah. Mike, let me just, one last question for me.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you
yeah.
mentioned something about identity. Do you think that's why a Tom Brady keeps going? Because he's afraid that if he retires, has no idea what he's going to do with his life. Do you think that's why he just says, I'm going to play till 45, 46? Is it that? Is just that Tom would feel like that moment where, what do I do now?
I think you can also make an argument that Tom Brady is still pretty darn good. But
yeah,
I do think you very rarely see an athlete just go off into the sunset, right? Like it almost always is they're not as good as they used to be, or they're injured and they can't stay on the field, or very rarely do you see an athlete who's like, all right, I'm on the tail end of my prime, I'll hang it up now. We can count those guys on one hand, like Barry Sanders, Calvin Johnson, like. The list isn't a lot longer than that. And that's where those identity challenges are worse, right? Because what allows you to successfully transition, we talked about earlier, is thinking about it ahead of time, but it's also planning for it in a way where if you get hurt, you blow out your knee and you never come back, that is an unplanned retirement. And your outcomes are much worse in that case than if you walk away on your own terms, in good health, still performing, and move on to what's next. And I would encourage athletes to reflect on that. But I also, you can't fault someone for going out there and trying to push their body to the limit and get every last every last dollar, every last year, every last season they can get out of their body until they have to go figure out what's next, because it is a daunting transition to face.
Yeah, no, of course. And you got people like Drew Brees that gets NBC Sports analyst job one day after retiring.
Yep. Or Tony Romo, right?
Yep.
Or Tony Romo was, what, a year? I guess a year.
He's just jumping back and forth.
He just jumps back and forth. Greg Olsen jumps back and forth. Yeah, obviously they know what they want to do. Now, as far as, you know, the colleges and even the NFL team, is it people, like, is it juniors and seniors or freshmen coming right in and already getting immersed in the program because they know eventually they're going to have to figure something out if they don't make it to the NBA or the NFL or whatever the case is?
The sooner the better, right? The sooner you start investing in that stuff, the easier it's going to be when the time comes. And also because you just don't know when you're going to – sure, you're an 18-year-old. You tear an Achilles as a sophomore, and you might not come back from that. And you got to be prepared for that reality. And the sooner the better. Part of the benefit of doing it this way, of doing it through technology and not doing it through just if staff members on a college campus, is that if you're a college athlete and you don't use this tool while you're on campus and you graduate and then you have this period of transition where you really struggle, we want to make sure you still have access. And so in the old days, when you graduated, you lost access to all of these resources, all of the on-campus tools, all of the support systems that could have helped you. And so part of the benefit of doing it through technology is if you wake up one day as a 24-year-old and you realize, I haven't had a job since I graduated, I'm depressed, I can't figure out what's next, we want you to still have access to this tool, still have access to the content and the resources and the relationships and the job opportunities so that you can turn that ship around when you're ready to.
Yeah, and you're 100% just when you're done, you're pretty much done. Like they sometimes they just wash their hands of you and they're like, okay, we got his 4 years of money and that's it. We'll invite him to one little alumni event a year and that's it. But it's good to give them this extra resource at their disposal at pretty much at any time. Now, is it strictly for the athletes or could it be any student in the school?
Yeah, right now it's strictly for athletes. We're trying to keep it very affinity-based. We've had a couple of different academic departments approach us about doing it. You could see this playing out for the engineering department at a school, for example. We've had a couple of different fraternities approach us about doing it for their organizations, right? But part of what makes this powerful is the really tight-knit affinity of these groups, where it's not LinkedIn. Everybody in the world is not on it. And it's never going to become this overwhelming place where you have to filter through 1,000 times to find one person that you might have something in common with, right? We want you to log into this community and know every single person here has a shared component of their identity with me and has been in my shoes before and understands what I'm going through and therefore can help me. And that's a really powerful component of it.
That's brilliant. A community built around a common thread. I wish I would have thought of something like that.
Yeah.
So where if our viewers wanted to find you, student athletes wanted to find you, even professional athletes who might be watching this, find you, where can they go to find Next Play?
Yeah. So our website, www.nextplay.me. And then on social channels, we are at Next Play Career. You can find us on mainly Instagram and Twitter is where we post most of our stuff. But yeah, nextplay.me is the website.
All right. So that's xplay.me. Kyle Mumma, the CEO. This is a great story, man. I always ask people, do you think it'll go public in 5 years? Because for some reason, I just think all these companies are going to go public. But can you see yourself doing that?
I don't know that's the path for us.
Okay.
I'd love for it to be. I think my investors would have some serious questions for me if I came on here and said, I think we're going public in 5 years. They'd ask me why that's not showing up in our financials yet. I don't know that's the path, but it's tough because it's a passion project of mine also. So it's you're somewhere in between. I want this to be as big of a cash generator as it can. And I really want to have a true impact on the athlete communities we're trying to serve.
Kyle, you're doing great work, man. Keep it up. Thank you for coming on tonight. It's just impressive, man. All the best to you. Great job.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Good talking to you. And you keep up the good work as well.
We're trying.
Thank you very much. And one last hot take from you. Is Christian McCaffrey going to stay a Carolina Panther?
Oh, man. You know what? I might have said no if you'd asked me that question 2 days ago because I could have seen him in a Deshaun Watson package, but I'm not sure that's going to happen now. So I will say yes, he is. They lost Samuel. I think he's probably going to stick around.
All right.
There it is.
All right. Perfect. Kyle, thanks again. It was an absolute pleasure. Best of luck and just keep up the great work. Obviously, yeah. You're doing great things. And at the end of the day, you're helping a lot of people. Thank you for that.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for the time.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
Have a good one.
I got to tell you, man, you know, these schools have these career things, but I wish I had something like that when I was
this
graduating.
I love like the people that we get on this show.
Yeah.
Like there's so many that are just like out for good. And you know, obviously we're not going to bring people on that are
they're not out for good. But we're not bringing people on that are going crazy.
But I'm saying they have like a real passion for trying to make things just a lot better than it already is. And it's not about the money. It's about what they're giving. And that's what it's about. So good job by Kyle. Thank you for coming on. It was an absolute pleasure.
Hope you come back.
Yeah, I'm back.
All right, man.
Yo, I don't know what Deshaun Watson's next play is, but our next play is to talk about some of this free agency stuff.
It's been a wild 3 days. It started Monday. It's been absolutely crazy. You got Kenny Galladay out there just flying all over the country on a private jet, just trying to sign somewhere. You got teams, you know, like the Patriots who just decide, you know what, we're going to sign
everybody.
Everybody. Yeah. And then you got teams like the Bears signing Andy Dalton, and you're like, what are you doing? It's just been incredible.
Well, the Bears did offer a trade package to the Seattle Seahawks, which, as sources show, included 3 first-round picks, a third-round pick, and 2 starters that were not named. For Russell Wilson, and the Seahawks turned it down. So Russell Wilson is probably not going anywhere if that kind of a trade offer was turned down.
Well, look, I think that when you have a elite quarterback, is a top 5 quarterback in the league, you don't trade guys like that. Like, you make it work. Like, you put your egos aside to make it work. And you saw what they did. They signed a couple of linemen, right? The question is for Russell to repair the relationships now in that locker room when he walks back in there, man. Because he basically said that what you have around me sucks and I got to get the hell out of you. And so what's that going to be like? He's the alpha in there now. It's his team. What's it going to be like? Is it going to be a tough atmosphere? Is him and Pete Carroll going to get along? We got to see how those things play out there in Seattle. But you're right. They made a hell of a package. But at the end of the day, look, they just said these guys don't come along once every 10, once every 15 years. We can't just pick up and get rid of them. They can't do that. So I don't blame them for not pulling the trigger on that.
Yeah. No, I agree. You make it happen because he is that type of talent.
Exactly.
So if he's not going anywhere, Wass is probably not going anywhere. So we don't have to talk about them for a minute. But yeah, the free agency has been crazy. Kyle Rudolph coming over here to the Giants. 2 years. Who else? John Ross coming to the Giants.
John Ross, yeah.
AJ Green going to the Cardinals, Patrick Peterson leaving the Cardinals and going to the Vikings for a year.
Yeah.
Like, it's just amazing how much shifts in off season in the NFL.
It's incredible.
More so than any other league. I guess you can make that argument in basketball a little bit too, because I guess they have a little shorter contracts, but baseball, I feel like baseball teams stay like the same. For the most part.
Yeah, for the most part. But
I think 6, 7 years.
The beauty about the NFL is the competitive balance, right? Like, you move to a different, like, all these teams, they have all this movement, but they're still, if there's good culture, they're good coaches, they can draft some good players, there's still that competitive balance that anybody can win the Super Bowl. In the NBA, a couple guys go here and there, and, you know, they're going to win the NBA title. It's a little different. This is a new NFL, though, right? Quarterbacks getting traded, the volatility in the league. And I got to tell you right now, what Arizona's trying to do with signing J.J. Watt, DeAndre Hopkins last year, and signing A.J. Green. Who else did they sign? The running back? What was his name? Chase Edmonds? Is that who's playing running back for them?
Chase Edmonds is still there, yeah.
They're going for it. Because I think Clint Kingsbury and those guys realize, listen, man, if we can't win it now, when are we going to win it?
Yeah.
That division's stacked. That's crazy.
The Jets just signed another player, defensive back LaMarcus Joyner, 1-year deal.
LaMarcus Joyner. Was he on the Saints? No.
He was on.
Here we go.
He's
on the Raiders? Yeah, he was on the Raiders.
Rams franchise tag in 2018. And yeah, he was on the Raiders. Okay. Yep. And Allen Robinson accepted his franchise tag the same day that Kenny Golladay went for a workout or a visit. So is Kenny Golladay going to move over to,
I don't know,
to the Bears from the Lions?
Are you surprised about this? Golladay, Schuster, these guys were pretty good wide receivers. They're not getting signed. They're not getting the contract.
Juju had a visit with the Jets, but
they were talking. But the Jets signed the receiver at Jacksonville, so that's over with.
I don't know. Signing Juju is like signing Charlie D'Amelio to your team.
Oh man, you got the jokes tonight.
Yep, Corvette. Nah, and Kenyon Drake moving over to the Raiders. That's interesting.
Raiders are
good. Fantasy wise, with Josh Jacobs, like his fantasy value has to take a hit with Kenyon Drake there right behind him. Chase Edmonds in Arizona, though, is going to shoot up fantasy draft boards. But he is supposed to visit the Giants, too. So we'll see what happens on the Kenny Dog.
And for those who were wondering, Mitchell Trubisky signed as a backup for the Buffalo Bills. So
you mean he's not taking over for Josh Allen? I thought for sure they were signing him just for that.
No.
But Andy Dalton is signed as the starter for the Bears, supposedly. They said he only signed because he was guaranteed a starting quarterback position. Rashard Perriman, ex-Jet, he went over to the Lions.
He went to the Lions. He's not going to do much there. I watched him last year.
Allen re-signs with Washington. Mm-hmm. Joe Flacco is visiting the 49ers.
Yep.
I read earlier. Panthers are signing David Moore from the Seahawks. NFL confirms investigations into allegations against Deshaun Watson.
I'll tell you, and then the pro days are starting. I'll tell you this about the draft. This is going to be an exciting draft because I'll tell you right now, the Carolina is going to look to move up from 8. And the question is how far they go. Do they want to go to Miami at 3 or the Jets at 2? And that's going to be interesting for the Jets because if I'm the Jets at 2, I say, okay, you guys want to come up? You're going to give it. We're going to trade picks. We're also getting Christian McCaffrey. And whatever else you want to give us to get to that number 2 pick, if you really want Trey Lance or Zach Wilson. That's where the draft starts. I'm so excited for this draft. It's going to be crazy. I think New England's going to try to get a quarterback as well. I don't think they're staying put. I think they're going to try to get somebody. So this way, once Cam Newton's season's over, that'll be the starting quarterback. It's going to be a night to watch, man. I can't wait to watch it. It's going to be real exciting.
It really is. And, you know, obviously, we hope that we can get some answers, a little bit better of a storyline before the draft starts and see if there's any. But obviously, these on-the-clock deals always happen, and they're good. They're bound to happen. There was one player that we did not mention. Will Fuller is moving over to Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
With Tua. And I guess we'll have to see what the Deshaun Watson stuff is, but Deshaun Watson's favorite target,
Will Fuller,
is Will Fuller. So that could change the whole aspect of the AFC East, bringing Will Fuller and Deshaun Watson over to the Dolphins if it just so happens. And I don't think anyone could take this risk right now of trading for Deshaun Watson.
No, I agree.
With nine women coming forward. So more things have to be fleshed out. And we'll just have to see what happens. But I agree. He definitely has to come forward. But Will Fuller will be eligible to play week two, because he's still under suspension for a substance abuse, personal conduct, substance use policy or something like that.
Let's not forget that Sam Darnold with the Jets, the market's dwindling, man. I don't know what team you're going to trade him to now. And so what are the Jets going to do? Are they going to hold? I'm starting to think it's 50-50 now, man. That's why I'm thinking the trade back scenario is the way to go, because they haven't made a move on him already. They already signed three wide receivers. What are the Jets going to do?
Yeah, unless you trade him somewhere where he's going to be backup or something, but I don't know.
Yeah, maybe nobody wants to give up a late one or early two for.
Who's the starting quarterback for Washington? Oh, they just got Fitzpatrick.
Fitzpatrick.
Yeah,
that's right. And Heinicke just signed. Didn't he sign like a $10 million contract over there?
Yes, he did. Yeah. He did. But it's going to be Fitzmagic's show. You don't bring Fitzpatrick in for anything but.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, you had another point on the NFL.
No, I was just going to say, March Madness is starting tomorrow.
March Madness is starting tomorrow. So, yeah.
Gonzaga is the favorite. So
if you have not filled out your brackets, go and do it now. I'm sure there are plenty of options out there on the internet to fill out the brackets with some nice prizes. I don't know if that Warren Buffett thing is still kicking. You know, it's like the perfect bracket for $1 billion.
Yeah, $1 billion if you get the perfect bracket.
It's been 710 days since the last March Madness.
Yeah. So
that's crazy.
It's going to be insane. A good one. But
that's insane. And a couple of honorable mentions. We have the Mets are putting their foot in their mouth again. Carlos Carrasco has a hamstring tear.
So, here we go. It's starting to fall apart.
So there's that. And then you got Dom Smith saying, if we keep winning games and we win the World Series at the end of the year, then we could start working on building a dynasty. Like, come on. Win a World Series first. Then you could start even talking. Don't even say that word. You shouldn't even say that word at all. You should just go out there and do it, not start talking about doing it. And then he's got a broken wrist after he says that. I just can't. You can't make it up with the Mets sometimes. But the Mets and the Yankees are opening up the stadium to 20% capacity.
Yes, that's great.
Starting April 1st and opening, which happens to be opening day. I think it's like 8,700 for City Field and it's like 10,300 for Yankee Stadium, something like that.
Yeah.
And the guidelines are going to be different. You need a negative result or fully vaccinated. So I just got my first one today on this arm. And it's,
congratulations.
It's hurting me. I would say I'd get a to help me out with it, but I'm not going anywhere near that.
Oh, man, you've been on a roll tonight. I want to, by the way, honorable mention. I know we talked about it last in the show. The great, marvelous Marvin Hagler, former middleweight middleweight champion in the 80s, passed away recently. He was 66 years old. I remember the first fight I ever saw of Marvin Hagler was against Sugar Ray Leonard in April 1987. I thought Hagler won that fight. I remember I was 9 years old watching that fight. And Leonard won a split decision. And then years later, I saw Hagler Hearns, the three most violent rounds in boxing. I even read a book about that. And our condolences to the Hagler family. The boxing community. He was a great world champion and he will definitely be missed.
Yes. Rest in peace.
Yeah.
Rest in peace. Yeah. I think we pretty much covered.
Yeah. We covered it all.
Most of it.
And the Knicks won 94-93. It will pull out a victory against the Orlando Magic. So
Magic today, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Until next week, there may be just one episode, but we will keep you posted. Exactly. But we will be here on Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern. Another great guest, and we look forward to seeing you there.
Take care, everybody. Peace.
Have a good night.